we went to the ASU rally on Tuesday. I mean, we just heard the Stick Together program where Amy interviewed an ASU organizer, and so it was good to hear that, and then kind of confront that with or like put that against what we saw on Tuesday.
It was a very large rally.
It was a very large rally. It was an interesting rally. It was one that, at least from what we saw, gave the voice to council workers. So there was large opportunities for actual council workers and actual organisers that did a lot of the work in doing this, you know, multi-council bargaining agreement, were able to say what their opinions was. But I think we were noting that there's a bit of an absent presence when we hear talked about inflation and cost of living, but without it being able to be tied to the material reality, like,
well,
around
some,
the world.
Yeah, and as some people have said, you know, people are working all the time. It's got nothing to do with hard work. It's about not actually being able to make ends meet. And so the council workers are a perfect example of this, because they work right across a whole range of services, you know, from the bin men to, could be bin women too, I don't know, but a whole range of services that keep the local municipalities are ticking over. People don't notice that they're doing all this work until the work is not actually being done.
And it's a shame that we kind of didn't learn our lesson from COVID, when it became incredibly obvious which roles are essential to keeping a society ticking over. One of the biggest ones was these kind of service industry jobs. And we've repaid them very poorly for that contribution.
Yeah, exactly. And this leads on to the headline coming out of the CPSU from Victoria, coming out of the Victorian election, where they're vying the candidates, the Liberal and particularly the Liberal and Labor candidates, vying for the worst attacks on the Victorian Public Service, thinking that once they go into bat for to win the election, that it's a winning thing to cut services to the Victorian public by sacking 70,000 public servants.
Yeah.
I mean, why is that a winning position to take for the Liberal whatever her name is?
It's also interesting because that was obviously an incredibly unpopular platform for Peter Dutton in the federal election. So it's interesting that they've revived it at the state level.
Well, it ties into, I know this sounds like a sort of a left field thing, but they've just had local council elections in England, and Reform has taken about 14 of the councils. And someone was going through the background to those wins. Many of the places that have taken on Reform are the ones that lost industries 20 years ago or earlier because of the greed of neoliberalism, the coal mining places, the textile factories that were outsourced to Bangladesh for slave labour. That's another angle of oligarchs and their corporate greed across the world. Many of these places that put Reform into their local councils wrongly believe have been fed the notion that the reason for why the coal mines were closed is because the Greenies don't agree with it, when in actual fact they obviously have no history. They forget Thatcher. They don't remember the battles on the ground, which seems pretty amazing to realise that the thousands of police who beat up on the miners, people have got amnesia.
Yeah, and I mean, so just the figures were that for the CPSU thing the headline you were mentioning is that the Liberal Party announced as its policy, one of its policy platforms, that the first cab off the rank should be $22 billion in budget savings what they're calling it, and actually what it
savings when it's cut.
When what they actually translate to is 7,000 Victorian public sector job cuts.
7,000.
7,000 job cuts, which means what we saw earlier.
I mean, and there's already been progressive cuts over time.
Yeah, like the State Library ones that we saw a rally at. A lot of these essential jobs that we don't think about how useful.
Well, they've already cut. The Labor people have already cut when they were talking about frontline staff. You know, they keep talking about the difference between frontline and backroom staff as if the people who are working behind the scenes are not the same people that are making the system work. Having someone, I mean, anybody who's rung an information line and had someone say, be nice to you on the line, but you can't actually get anything to happen, knows perfectly well that having a backroom support to frontline workers is absolutely essential. So what we're really saying is that these politicians have no idea how the system works.
I was going to say, I think it just boggles my mind that these people keep on getting involved in government that clearly have a complete disregard for the systems of government. Like, say what you will about a bureaucratic state, but I think one of the benefits of it is it has these highly systematized organizational structures that make your society fairly well organized. And
the rubbish gets collected.
Yeah, exactly. You have a government that functions.
Well, also, like, the other aspect was, you know, what that we were reflecting on sort of as a group after with some of our friends that were ASU organizers there, and we were talking about what makes up a council worker, like what do they do, how do they think of themselves, and then how does the union view them? Because even linking back to the interview that we had with Don a few weeks ago, where he was talking about the chant, you know, union power, depends where you put that power in the, you know, union bureaucrats or
grassroots,
or in the grassroots, or if you put it with members, or, and that's where the power thing. So talking about that would be, how do we expand this vision of what union members see themselves as and how their organization functions and what it's meant to represent? Because if it is just about pay, then that kind of means that, you know, the drive to war and councils allowing defense spending in their councils is fine as long as everyone gets paid more.
Yeah, exactly. And of course it's not.
And we know what it looks like when these systems do fall apart. We can look at America. I was in the US last year in New York, and obviously it's one of the most progressive parts of America. It's also one of the wealthiest parts of America. Rubbish wasn't being collected. There was rubbish everywhere. Central Park, one of the biggest landmarks in the city, weeds everywhere. So when you don't have government actually doing what government does, it visibly reduces people's quality of life, not to mention the more kind of pernicious ways that a lack of government destroys people's lives systematically. But it has a real impact, and you can go to a country like America to see what happens when you don't have state services functioning properly.
Oh, that's really funny. Now that you've taken us to Central Park, I really wanted to talk about Chris Smalls. Chris Smalls, who was the founder of the first successful union at the Amazon, now met the Met Gala, apparently, because Australia is now a suburb of America, apparently. And so they reported on this bizarre event on the end of many of the legacy news on TV.
I was amazed to see it reported in The Guardian.
I mean, that's exactly right. Dress, for some reason or other, we're supposed to be interested. But the most interesting thing about it was that Chris Smalls and his people were demonstrating out the front, and they'd done this really interesting thing. They put a whole lot of beakers of fake urine all through the entire place to represent the fact that Amazon workers don't have enough time to go to the toilet because of the pressure on their maintaining their jobs. And the reason why it's completely related to Amazon is because Bezos and his woman, his partner, who looks like, all of them look like Donald Duck because they've all had things done to their faces, and they all wear clothes that bring tuck into their hips like they're from, you know, like Jessica Rabbit. So they're all playing some mind game that we're all supposed to be part of. I don't know, because they're representatives of the way you're supposed to look. Anyway, he's put up the big bucks for this particular event. It costs $100,000 a ticket to go to that event. The pass of that, the event is for an institution that was given land for free, public land. It's in Central Park. In 1870, it was given this land, and it was on the proviso that it should be open and free for the public to come to this event, you know, to this museum. And now they have a discretion. You have to pay $30 to go in there. You know, like they say it's voluntary, but you actually have to pay $30 to go in there. So it's no longer free. And the electricity bill is paid by the public, right? All this stuff that's so weird. And you know what the theme for this year was? Because it's the money is apparently going for the payment of the workers and for the upkeep of the costume section of the museum, right? All the other money is to keep the place going is public money, right? And all this money goes in that they raise. And the theme was black male dress as a form of resistance. And so out the front.
I think this is actually fake news. Sorry, Annie. That was last year's theme.
No, this year's theme.
No, this year's theme was fashion as art.
Fashion
as art.
No, fascism as art.
Not fashion. Fashion as art. But that was last year's theme.
Really? Yeah. But anyway, it's pretty hilarious.
It is.
Because it was live art out the front with Chris Moores being mauled by the coppers.
Yeah. But even if that was last year's theme, there are many, many examples of how kind of obviously, I don't know what the word is for it, but you've got this kind of...
It's weird.
For instance, there was someone wearing a dress this year that I think the title...
Like meat or something.
No, there was a title... No, not that crazy. There was a title of a dress called like Tax the Rich or something like that. A participant at the Met Gala was wearing.
Yeah, AOC and was wearing it.
No. That you guys are just very far behind on your Met Gala news. That was about 5 years ago.
Okay, all right. Go on, get on with it.
The point is, there's this kind of, this spectacle of class consciousness that goes on and racial consciousness that goes on at this event, even though it's kind of this massive display of excess happening in a city where as soon as you walk out the doors of the Met Gala, you're surrounded by essentially poor black people. It's a city full of people who are unhoused, and most of those people are not white people. So yeah, it begs belief that these people kind of can't see the hypocrisy.
Well, that's funny you should say that, because one of the socialist papers said, what is it about the Met Fashion Gala that leads one to think fondly of the guillotine?
I can understand that.
Anyway, I thought that was really funny.
Well,
but
speaking of, you know, American hypocrisy, we've also had some updates in Empire news this week. We've had Cuba sanctions being ramped up and specifically targeting Cuban companies this week. So Grupo de Administración Empresarial S.A., I hope that wasn't too difficult to listen to. Sorry, everyone. Which is a conglomerate controlled by the country's military with ties to nearly all segments of its economy, and the executive president of the company have been sanctioned, as well as Cuba's state-owned nickel company's joint venture with a Toronto firm, Sherritt International. they've been targeted directly. The UN has responded to these sanctions by, actually three special rapporteurs have responded by condemning the sanctions as an unlawful blockade, which is not only disrupting daily life, but also undermining the enjoyment of a wide range of human rights. So it's not all pretty frocks in the United States at the moment. They're destroying people's lives abroad.
Can we talk about something that you discovered the pursuit of gas?
This is some of the scariest news this week for me. The Minns government in New South Wales has announced that they're going to be opening up new areas in the far west of the state for gas exploration. This is after a more than decade-long pause. So they had previously been listening to communities that had, particularly the Stop the Gate, Lock the Gate, sorry, campaign, had pushed back against this kind of exploration as destructive to local communities, agriculture, the environment, obviously.
Like everything.
Yes. So it's a pretty big backflip from the New South Wales Labor government. A Greenpeace Australia Pacific ambassador has criticised the Labor government for, quote, once again bending over backwards to please the gas lobby. This is Soleil Snyder from Greenpeace. She went on to say that this is not going to solve any problems. Any new gas coming from the far west would be more expensive than renewable energy and take decades to come online. It would also destroy the environment, cause enormous irreversible climate damage, and delay the transition to what is irrefutably a cheaper, cleaner source of energy, renewables. The government, this is the part that is, you know, pretty shocking.
Flabbergasting.
The government announced that it will open up the Banchania and Pondy Range troughs for gas exploration applications. And these applications, previously the fee was $50,000 for an application. It's now being reduced to $1,000. So they're essentially saying, we're giving away this land for free.
And of course,
please come mine.
And the gas is this exploration is completely unnecessary, not needed. And the Minns government just throws disaster upon disaster. Following discussion yesterday with the Minns Labor government and members of parliament, the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council confirms that Aboriginal land rights in New South Wales is under attack following the introduction of a recent bill by the Minister for Lands and Property. Without consultation or notice, the Crown Lands Management Amendment Bill 2026 was introduced in Parliament under the guise of miscellaneous minor amendments, but they're not minor. This is an attack by stealth. The New South Wales government deliberately introduced an amendment to another bill to allow out their rights under the Aboriginal Land Rights Act 1983, one of the most significant land restitution frameworks in Australia. If passed, the changes will erode land rights in New South Wales and overturn more than 40 years of hard work. The proposed changes will override the decision of the High Court in Quarrie Street, which reconfirmed the long-settled law that the lawful use of Crown land in relation to the ALRA must include the land being physically used, and that simply holding a lease over land does not mean a land claim can be refused. The proposed changes will give the New South Wales government broad powers to retrospectively validate unlawful leases issued by the minister. No other law in New South Wales deals with the lawful use of Crown land. There is no need for provisions to have a retrospective effect, more other than to defeat Aboriginal land claims. It's pretty grim, actually.
I also think the fact that the federal and state Labor governments are perpetually, and you know, rightfully so when you consider the rise of far-right ideologies in Australia, preoccupied with the radicalization of the Australian public. And I just think, like, what do you...
Maybe they're intending it.
Maybe, but I just think I cannot imagine a more predictable outcome than government being less transparent, less trustworthy and less effective than radicalizing people.
Well, it does, to me, it's a bit like having watched a cattle dog and two cattle dogs and a farmer corralling a whole bunch of sheep into a particular space. And it sounds like to me that most of the politicians are the sheep, not the cattle dogs. the business about government, Labor governments giving a free kick to big business, it came to my attention this week that anybody who puts their house up for sale and uses an online service, which is all monopolised by Murdoch interests in Australia, has to pay $4,000 just for a listing online. In America, the same service is free. In England, it costs $100. So
it's cheaper to apply to frack gas than it is to list a home.
Online. You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie, Tobiah and Anila.
There's been a pretty big update in terms of the very fragile ceasefire between the US and Iran.
Ceasefire, yeah.
So the US this week has bombed Iran's Qassem port. This obviously violates the terms of the very precarious ceasefire that has been in place since April. Fox News reporter Jennifer Griffin was the first to report on the US strikes. Qassem Island, where the port was bombed, is in the Strait of Hormuz, and as well as this port, the Iranian port city of Bandar Abbas was also bombed. It's the same area where the US previously had bombed an elementary school on February 28th, killing 120 children. The strikes have led to an immediate escalation in the conflict. Iran said that its forces responded to the US attacks in the region by targeting US warships, and US Central Command released a statement that said three US Navy destroyers came under attack while transiting the Strait of Hormuz. Trump told ABC reporter Rachel Scott that the US bombing of Iranian ports was, quote, a love tap, and that the, quote, ceasefire is going, it's in effect.